Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Kim Grenolds of Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. It's been a while since we've done a Dogman Radio, but a big combine event for the University of Washington back in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine that Washington, 13 members, was it, Chris? 13 members of the team?
Yeah, 13. Well, yeah, 13 were invited. As it turned out, there were a couple of players that were banged up and couldn't actually test or go through the drills. But for the most part, almost everybody went through the drills that were available. And, you know, as we'll talk about, probably right off the top, some of them went way above and beyond what they were even expected to do.
Yeah, Washington and Michigan seemed to dominate the players at the Combine. Michigan with 18 people invited, but University of Washington, a great PR piece for them this weekend. Pretty much all of the guys, you know, had outstanding combines. A lot of people like to say that they had outstanding combines, but I think minus one, everybody pretty much, had a great day. And it all started off with one of the best, in my opinion, the greatest of all time at the University of Washington as a wide receiver. I love you, Reggie, but move on over. Romo Odunze was spectacular out there.
I love Romo Odunze too. Reggie is still top for me, but that doesn't matter because we're not talking about Reggie Williams any right now, at least. Rome, you know, had a great day on Saturday. Looked great catching the ball. Looked great running. Had a what did he run? A 4.47 and then a 4.45 in this 40-yard dash at 212 pounds, 39-inch vert, 10.4 broad jump. I mean, the guy just looked outstanding. And then he had the thing afterwards where he was the last player on the field and he was trying to do the three cone drill and get it. Did he want to get it under six?
Under six six.
Yeah. And he ended up with a 6.88. So 6.88. So, you know, I mean, he's overall one of the greatest Huskies to ever play the game, and showed why he is rated as one of the top 5 to 10 prospects in the entire draft this year.
Hey, Scott, just to elaborate on that a little bit, what you were talking about, and they, you know, were really dwelling on it on the NFL network, was the field was empty. Everybody was gone. Everybody went into the locker room. Rome stayed out there and did that drill two or three more times. I don't know if it's OCD or what the deal was, but he said, you know, his goal was 6'6", and he was bound and determined to get that 6'6", and he kept on knocking over the one cone, but he just kept on staying out there with everybody else off the field. So I think that's what made it unique.
Yeah, one thing I will say, if there's a cynic in you, you're probably thinking, oh, that just got his name out there that much more, you know, and everything like that. But I know Romo Odunze. We all three know Romo Odunze. Anybody who covered the team knows him. That's not his style. He's not a guy who's drawing a lot of attention to himself. He just lets his play kind of do the talking. I was like, okay, whatever. I mean, you still killed it in every other drill. So I don't know why the 6'6 was such a big thing, but you know what? That's what separates guys like Romo Odunze from guys like me, is his competitive nature, the fact that he thinks he can get better, and he's still going to get drafted in the top 5 to 10 places in the NFL draft, and I don't think that's something that is anything to be too worried about is knocking 28 hundredths of a second off of your three cone drill.
And Chris, I kind of equate it to, you know, we've all been out to basketball practice and some guys just won't leave the floor unless they have a perfect swish, unless they make five free throws in a row, unless they get a certain sound out of the net. And that's what Romo Odunze did out there on, it was a Saturday, and it caught a lot of attention. But also, Chris, talk a little bit about, we've been dealing with him for quite some time. He's the real deal. And I've said this more than once, when you're dealing with Romo Odunze, he's done when you're done with him. He's not done when he's done. He's done when you're done with him. He's one of the best we've ever dealt with.
For sure he is. And I think the media, the national media, got a great big pile of that the day before, because the way the combine works, the media always gets a chance to talk to the position group the day before they actually go on the field and do the testing and the drills and everything like that. And so the day before, so Friday, they got a chance to talk to him and the other Washington wide receivers, Jalen Polk and Jalen McMillan, as well as Michael Penix Jr. and Dylan Johnson. And, the one thing that's a real hallmark of the combine event in general is the meetings with the teams that these players go through. And, you know, it's a lot of it's a test of attrition, guys. A lot of it's just like, can you get through it? Can you be consistent? Can you really show off your best self to these guys off the field? Because they want you to be a great citizen and a credit to the team and not a problem off the field, right? But they'll ask you so many bizarre questions. That's always been like one of the hallmarks. And so even with the media now, it's kind of spilled over to the regular media. So the regular media was asking Rome questions like, so if you were on a plane and you had to land it, could you? You know, are birds real? Stuff like that. He literally was asked these questions, and he was asked the question about could he land the plane, and he's like, no, and he's like, all souls have perished. It's like, I mean, and of course that stuff is going to generate headlines because it's engaging. He's showing off his real self. Yeah. He's being honest, and all of that shines through. And those are all things that you Scott and I have known for years about Rome, is that he is who he is, and like you said, He's there to answer your questions, and when you're done, he can move on to whatever he needs to do.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, you guys, but I asked him earlier in the year about his NIL money, and I asked him if he'd bought anything special, like a chain or a car or anything. His answer was no. He invested it. He said he hadn't spent any of his NIL money. So he's a little bit of a unicorn. So. But everybody's expecting him to go top 10. Daniel Jeremiah says he's his favorite player in the draft, ranks him number 3 on his big board. So I think any team that gets Rome Odunze is going to have a special player. But the guy that I thought that blew me away yesterday was, a guy that keeps on creeping up and up and up on the draft charts, and that's Troy Fa'utanu. I thought he looked fantastic.
He did. Yep. He absolutely did. Yeah. I mean, waiting at, what was it, 317? I don't have it pulled up right
317.
Now.
317.
Yeah, 317. You know, just, I mean, looks so smooth in his in his drop back and the way he's doing stuff. Daniel Jeremiah just gushed about him on the coverage. And what did Taylor Luan say his new nickname was going to be? Quadzilla.
Quadzilla.
So, yeah, I mean, that was great. That was a great line. And that's a name that gets passed around all the time in football circles. So it's nothing new, but 6'4", 34 and a half inch arm, 317 pounds, just a guy, and ran a 5.01. And I don't think he was even that smooth coming out of his start. I think he could break 5. For a guy his size and the way he can pull and how physical and all the things that he is and his leadership and how smart he is and how savvy he is at picking different stunts up and everything. He's a guy who's going to go earlier than maybe a lot of people think he should. And the other thing is, too, Jeremiah said, hey, he's only 6'4", or 6'4 and a half, whatever he was, 6'4". He said this guy could play tackle easily because he's got those long arms and he's got those great feet. A lot of people think he's going to move inside the guard, and I think that he would be great there, but I think he'd do just fine at tackle too.
And Chris, I kind of agree with what – I can't remember who said it, but they're going to put – he says that he thinks the best thing for Troy would to put him at tackle until he proves he's not a tackle, but – I think that just adds that much versatility when you have a guy that can play both positions. I think that really, really adds to your value on a team. Where do you think he's best?
Well, yeah, I heard Charles Davis say that yesterday, Sunday, and he's one of a few analysts that have basically said, hey, he's a tackle. You put him at tackle. If for some reason he struggles or can't adjust to the game the way they need him to adjust to it, then you can clearly move him inside. And Fautanu himself has said it, and has said it in not even a real boastful way, just kind of a matter-of-fact way, that he feels he's the most versatile lineman in the draft. And I don't know how anyone can really argue against it in terms of what he brought on the field. Again, like you guys said, didn't really run the cleanest 40, but still was basically at 5, which when you're at 317 pounds, that's plenty fast. You know, that's the last 40 he's ever going to have to run.
And Chris, the other thing too is, and they talked about it a little bit, but we've seen him for years. But you know, a lot of time when you get guys that are as athletic as him, they don't have that nasty. He's got the nasty. It's just like, I mean, it's like almost like he's out there just barrel rolling guys and laughing.
Oh yeah. No. He obviously enjoys the game. He's got a joy for it. But you even look at the physical stuff, you know, because people will say, well, you know, because his height was basically 6'3¾". So he's not quite 6'4". Well, you know, a lot of these teams, especially offensive line coaches, sometimes they have these cookie cutter ideas that you got to be 6'5", 6'6", to be able to be a legit tackle. You see like Notre Dame's Joe Alt, who is considered kind of the overall number one tackle. And you see he's 6'8", and they look at his long arms and how, you know, that's what the NFL wants, because that allows him to basically press the ends so they can't get in on him. Well, you can't say the same thing about Troy Fautanu. I mean, he's just not built that same way, but he's just got that toughness and that ruggedness. And like you said, Kim, his will to just go ahead and overpower you is too strong. And Scott, that's what made him one of the best tackles in college football.
And Scott, it's his bend. He's a knee bender instead of a waist bender, and he's getting really good leverage. And that was one of the things that really stood out to a lot of people, is how low he's able to get, because you know as well as anybody, low man always wins.
Yeah, if you watch the drills that he was in yesterday, he looked like he was sitting in a chair half the time. I mean,
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, you're looking for guys who bend at the knees, not at the waist, and he can do it all. And he just looked outstanding. I don't know if we can really say how good he looked yesterday. I mean, he just looked out freaking standing in all the drills he did, in everything he did. Apparently, he crushed all of the interviews that he did with teams. You know, Stacey Dales and Jamie Erdahl, the two sideline reporters for the combine, and they were talking, they were relating stories, and one was about Fautanu being that volleyball player in junior high and high school before he ever really took up football, and how that helped his lateral quickness and his quick twitch athleticism and everything like that, you know, because you have to change direction so quickly and play in volleyball and everything like that, and his springiness as an athlete. What was his vertical? Was it
32 and a half?
I mean, 32 and a half.
Yeah.
At 317 pounds.
He was top 10 in his vertical jump out of 30 offensive linemen, and he was top 5 with the Stanley broad jump, 9'5".
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely crushed it, and he put himself squarely in the middle of the first round, because I mean, honestly, from a talent standpoint, he's probably a top 10 to top 12. Kind of a prospect, but so many of these quarterbacks are going to get overdrafted because teams have to get a quarterback, and they see them start coming off the board. You're going to see quarterbacks be taken, and we're going to talk about Washington's quarterback here in a little bit. But you know, I just think when you look at what he can do and the versatility he gives you, that's just going to make you a guy who can do so many things for a team. And with the 52 or 53 man limit on the roster for NFL players, they're looking for guys who are versatile, can play multiple positions.
Yeah, the buzz for Michael Penix was undeniable. A lot of eyes on Michael. A lot of people throughout the country have never watched Michael Penix play. But, you know, the way he was spinning the ball and his measurements, I would say, did he live up to the hype, Chris, or did he exceed it? I think he exceeded it.
I don't know if he exceeded it because the hype was already pretty strong as a Heisman runner-up and a Maxwell Player of the Year, National
Player of the Year. I think there was more intrigue than hype with Michael Penix going into this.
Yeah, because there, you know, he said that he may run, you know, so there was always kind of that hanging out there. He did not run a 40, so I'm assuming that he'll run at his pro day at the Dempsey at the end of the month. You know, we'll see if that happens. I mean, I don't even know if he'll run a 40. We'll see. You know, biggest thing for him obviously was what was going to happen off the field in terms of the medicals and the and his injury history and everything else and all that stuff. It's all well documented, but it's also every team and their doctor and the way that they view these things is going to be completely subjective. And so that's really going to be ultimately, I think, what tells the tale on Michael Penix, because no one can deny what he does on the field. He's done it on tape. He did it in the biggest stages in the country in college football. And he did it again, you know, in terms of what they needed to see on Saturday and him throwing the ball. The one thing I think is really, really interesting, though, is that as a lefty, you just don't see a lot of left-handed guys out there. I mean, obviously, he's going to get comps to players like Steve Young and some of these other guys. But it'll be interesting to see whether or not being a left-handed quarterback is really held against him ultimately when teams decide not only whether or not they can draft him at a certain point, but whether or not there's going to be a run on quarterbacks, kind of what Scott was alluding to, and whether or not he has to get drafted earlier because some of these teams are like, well, if we don't draft him now, we're going to get left behind.
Scott, the other thing was his measurables in the, you know, 6'2" and 3/8" I believe he was, but
6'2" and a quarter.
Yeah, 6'2" and change, and 10.5-inch hands, top 10 all time at the combine with 10.5-inch hands. I think Hugh Millen was in there at one point. I'll have to ask Hugh how big his were, but Hugh's big on the hand size, which enables you to really, really spin the football.
Yeah, and you could see when he was throwing the long ball. So they threw the route tree basically on Saturday, and he looked so good throwing those short and intermediate passes. But where he really shines is his long ball. I mean, he puts great arc on it, spins the ball. The revolutions is one thing that they talked about, revolutions per second. And I mean, his long ball looked unbelievable. I think he threw one 62 yards and then 67 yards. On a couple of them, and the guy that everybody was wowing over on with the first group, because Michael Penix was in the second group of quarterbacks, and in the first group it was Joe Milton, right? And they were just like, here goes, and they were all talking, and he had a big cannon. Michael Penix throws effortlessly and almost throws the exact same distance that Joe Milton does, and Milton has more of a windup than Michael Penix does. Michael Penix can just release it with bad footwork and still get the ball off really well. So you know, one thing is that I think a lot of people are always going to question his injuries and things like that. I think the biggest thing for him is going to be showing that under pressure he can perform well. Now, we saw it in some games where he struggled with the pressure, namely ASU and the Michigan game. But for the most part, he handled pressure relatively well. And I think, and, you know, there were times against Oregon in that first game back in 2022. Where he had a guy hitting it, I think it was Justin Flo, hit him as he throws a 65-yard bomb, just stands in there, hits it, throws a 65-yard bomb to Jalen Polk. So, but that was also a Tosh Lupoi defense, so you just never know. Yeah. And Demetrius Martin compared to secondary. But all I'm saying is that's one thing that people are going to have a little bit of a question on. I'm not saying it should be a big question, but it's always going to be a question because in the NFL, you're never going to have a clean pocket.
And Chris, one of the things that I found interesting was somebody related it to maybe a spring training in baseball. There's certain guys that, you know, when pitchers, it sounds different when their ball hits the catcher's glove. There's certain batters, it just sounds different coming off the bat. And people stop and go, who is that? And evidently that's what happened with Michael Penix on Saturday. When he threw the football, some oohs and ahs and Caleb Williams, guys came out of the locker room and guys stood still to watch Michael Penix throw the football on Saturday.
As they should have. And that's, you know, the one thing is on the field, everyone can see it. You can see it in the stands. You can see it up in the boxes where all the scouts and the coaches and all the GMs and everyone else is up there for all their teams. What I was really impressed with is we got to see, because of social networks and everything else, we got a chance to see sometimes kind of behind the scenes, like in the days leading up to Saturday's on-field performance, where you would see guys like Penix throwing footballs in the concourses of Lucas Oil Stadium to, you know, where teams are watching and things like that, because it's kind of a free for all, right? I mean, they can kind of, hey, throw this quick route, throw this right here, right? You know, we've got 20 yards here. We can work with it. And we're seeing little videos and this and that. And you can just hear it there. Even like on little videos, people are like walking by or they're stopping and they're looking and they're paying attention. Yep. And they're like, what in the heck is going on? This guy's making throws that we haven't seen before or we haven't seen in a long time. And so no one's going to doubt it. And I think it solidified guys, at least in my mind. And there are certainly some guys on the NFL Network and other analysts that were there that said flat out, of the guys that threw at the combine, and there was a number of them, the top three guys didn't in terms of Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels. But of all the other guys that threw, he was by far the best pure thrower. And yep. There's a lot of people that will argue he's still the best pure thrower, even when you add in those other guys too. So, again, if there's a run on quarterbacks, could you see Michael Penix going maybe middle first round, depending on, you know, availability and supply and demand? We'll see.
The guy that I kind of scratching my head a little bit, Braylon Trice, weighed in at 245, ran a 4.740, did not look good in the drills, looked uncomfortable. He may have tweaked a hamstring or a quad or something, but not quite sure what was going on with Braylon. He didn't do the vertical broad jump. He didn't do the three cone drill. He just didn't do any of that. I guess he's going to wait and, you know, just had a bad combine, and we'll see what happens at the Washington Pro Day. But Scott, film don't lie.
Yeah, you're right. He didn't look great. Now, the one thing I will say is we don't know what his overall health was like. You know, I'm not making an excuse. There's always a possibility he was sick and just didn't tell people because he wanted to work out and compete and everything like that. But he didn't look great. Weighed in very light. Had dropped almost 25 pounds from what he had played at the University of Washington. And so I don't know. I've got some questions on things. You know, but Kim, like you said, the film doesn't lie. And so the one thing that a lot of people who don't know the draft process, these coaches, these scouts and everything, they look at film, they watch them live, they go to practices, they see all these things these guys can do on the football field, and then they get him in underwear, you know, what they call the underwear Olympics out there at the combine. And, you know, you see guys like Mike Mamula jump up from a second round draft choice to a top 10 draft choice because of one workout. And then he doesn't really do anything in the NFL. And a lot of people have learned over the years that you can't put too much on the combine. The combine is a nice little way of reading guys and their competitive nature and their some of their explosive athleticism. But when it comes to playing football, Braylon Trice gets it done on the field. He eats up blocks. He can play against the run. He can play against the pass. He can get after the quarterback. He can do it all that you want from that edge position. So as bad as he might have looked in the combine, maybe it hurts him by 10, 15 spots or something like that. But in the long run, teams are going to see what they saw. And that was a guy who could compete and get out there and play and do a lot of different things for your defense.
And Chris, the first thing that made me open my eyes with Braylon was coming in at 245 pounds.
Yeah, it was certainly, it felt like it was a tactic, right? It felt like he was lightening up so that he could run fast and show his quickness, show his versatility. Because, you know, bottom line is that a lot of it depends on, you know, what kind of information and what kind of advice they're getting right after the season is over. You know, do teams look at a guy like Braylon Trice and do they see a pure rush end? Do they see almost more of a linebacker? Because, for instance, Braylon Trice was working with the defensive ends, but a guy like Zion Tupuola-Fatui, he was grouped in with the linebackers along with Edifuan Ulufosio. So you just don't know what kind of information is getting out there and what kind of information and advice is being fed to these players when maybe they're in kind of a tweener position maybe and you're not really 100% sure. So it felt like a tactic. Didn't come off, I'm sure, at all the way that he would have hoped. And I agree 100% with you, Kim, that at least after that 40 testing and they went on to the on-field drills, like he had a four-bag drill where he hit one of the bags and it looked like he tweaked something and he was never the same since. And so it's super unfortunate that it happened. the upshot is that he's got almost a month to get right and to be able to show people at his pro day workout at the Dempsey that he can do exactly what they need him to do athletically or physically. But again, he's going to be a great test case to find out not only, you know, why he did what he did, because we'll get a chance to talk to him afterwards at the pro day, but we're all also going to find out why he did what he did. And then also, does he see himself in a certain way that's different than the way he played at Washington?
Yeah, I think what this does for him, Chris, is it just makes people dig deeper, take a deeper dive with him. But again, I keep on saying Phil doesn't lie, and he'll have a chance to run at the pro day. And I'm sure that, you know, that deep dive is going to include, you know, finding out about the weight loss, talking to the strength and conditioning coach at Washington, Ron McKeefrey, as well as, you know, I mean, these guys, they talk to opposing coaches, opposing players. So I think what it comes down to is they're just going to have to do a bigger dive on Braylon Trice. But at the end of the day, Braylon Trice is an NFL player, and he'll be on a roster next year.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that thought he could be an outside first round guy, first day guy. Does something like this all of a sudden put enough red flags in there to slip him to the second day? Maybe. But again, like Scott said, it's a snapshot. It's one day. It's one workout. Does it nullify anything that the tape would have already shown people? I don't think so. So it's going to be very interesting again. Because I think he's in a case, it's kind of like Fautanu. I mean, there's a lot of versatility there, but it depends on one team falling in love with him at a certain position, in a certain place, doing a certain thing on that defensive front that will eventually kind of see where he ends up landing.
Jalen Polk ran a 4.52. I think he probably was trying to get under 4.5 into that 4.4 range, but a 4.52 is not going to hurt him at all. 37.5. inch vertical jump, 10 feet 9 inches on the broad jump. Those are all just fine numbers, but he's probably the third wide receiver for University of Washington, and he got some air time as well.
Yeah, I think you know, to be honest with you, it's interesting that, you know, he kind of went from wide receiver 3 this year to wide receiver 2 because of Jalen McMillan missing so much time. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that really feel like he's got value, like a lot of value, and could potentially be like a solid day two guy, not even a fringe day two guy, but a guy that could be an early maybe day two guy. I think there's a lot of people out there that feel like Polk is definitely the guy behind Odunze in terms of being Washington's next best receiver. And I think he showed it in the drills. I think he was rock solid in the drills. To be honest with you, I thought Jalen McMillan was solid in the drills as well. So there's a lot of value there. I think in some ways, maybe if your teams, it was hard to figure out where each one of those guys would go, because in some ways, at least in terms of production, they would cancel each other out. But McMillan feels more like a slot guy to me, whereas Polk is more of an outside guy.
And again, Scott, film doesn't lie. Jalen Polk had a really good year up until about three quarters of the way through the season. He hadn't had a drop. He went through a little stretch there where he had a couple of drops. But film doesn't lie with Jalen Polk.
No, not at all. I mean, he's a special player, and he's a nice complementary wide receiver. He's a wide receiver 2 or wide receiver 3. I don't see him as a number one wide receiver on a NFL roster, but man, could he be a great Chris, you see him as an outside guy, and I could totally see that, but I could also see him really exploiting some things out of the slot too. And a lot just depends on where he finds his spot. You know, could the Washington Redskins, I know that they were one team that talked to him, could the Texans be that guy, be that team? Could he possibly end up in New York, where, you know, they've already got their number one guy and they've actually got a number two guy? So Polk could come in and be your number 3 and really just be a guy that really exploits things in the 3 and 4 receiver set. So a lot of different things that he can do. He's a great blocker. He's a hard worker. He loves the game of football. He's a workout warrior. He's always in the gym. Didn't they talk about one of the things that he brought his air mattress with him so he could sleep in the facilities? Is that one of the stories that I heard? So, you know, I mean, the guy just eats, breathes, and sleeps football. And Yeah, he's going to be a nice get for somebody on day two, maybe day three if he lasts longer than he should. But day two, day three, I see him as a huge pickup for somebody that – because really, as great as some of those players are in those in the first round, and those are your superstars and those are the guys who are your a lot of your playmakers, the guys that help win Super Bowl titles, conference titles, send you to the playoffs and everything like that are those guys who are drafted in the third, fourth, fifth round.
Yeah. Yeah, and Scott, one of the things about Jalen Polk, as we said, the film doesn't lie. And one of the things that you don't get to see at the combine, Jalen Polk, like Romo Odunze, has that ability to make the tough catch. He can catch balls in traffic. He can catch those 50-50 balls. And I think those are the things that are going to stand out that you can't see at the combine. So
yeah, well, Kim, you mentioned that he didn't have a drop, and then he went through, I think it was a three-game stretch where he really struggled with drops for whatever reason. Because in his three seasons at the University of Washington, we never saw him have issues with that.
Yeah.
So it was really weird to see him have that. But Oregon State was the most glaring, in my opinion, for him. And he just did not look right in that game. But every other game that you see, other than those two or three games where he struggled with the drops, the guy just was nails. I mean, he got open. Yeah. He exploited single coverage, all that different thing. And he's a great route runner. That's another thing that really shows off in the way he runs routes.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And Chris, one of the guys that is going to be real interesting is Roger Rosengarten. He ran the fastest 40 of any of the offensive linemen, looked really athletic, came in, what was it, 305, 308, which kind of surprised me. I thought he'd be more in the 320 range, but maybe he just dropped a little bit for the combine. But the thing with Roger is he's young, and the guys keep on saying this may be the best offensive line draft in a long, long time. Is he going to get lost in that?
Well, you know, one of the main mantras and the main themes of the whole scouting combine when it came to the offensive lineman guys, as you know, it's like if a team needs a tackle, that's not going to be a problem. And there's a ton of really, really good ones. Yeah. And yeah, could Roger end up, like you say, could he end up being lost in the shuffle? Potentially. But here's the thing. He ran a 4.92 40 at 308 pounds. You can't teach that. His 9.5 standing broad jump was top 10 out of 50 offensive linemen there. You can't teach that kind of explosiveness. You can't teach those kinds of innate physical traits. And like you said, with him being young, that's just more clay for molding if you're an offensive line coach. He was coached by a coach now that's in the NFL with Scott Huff with the Seahawks. So he was getting NFL level coaching. He is in a situation. Yes, he's young, but if there's a certain team out there that can bring him in as maybe an understudy to a veteran right tackle, for instance. That could be in an ideal situation for him. Now, the downside for Roger in that is that it might lessen his value to the point where maybe he ends up being like an early day three guy, whereas maybe in a normal tackle class, he would be borderline day one, early day two guy because of the physical measurements that he had, as well as what is shown on tape.
Yeah, going down the list, when we take a look at Jalen McMillan, Scott, I think Jalen had a fine combine. He ran a 4.47. He had a 37-inch vert. I think he did what people expected. I thought he looked good in the drills. I think he looked good. I don't think he blew anybody away on anything. I think he was what we expected out of him. I think the key, again, on him is going to be his medicals. He was hurt last year and missed some time this year as well.
Well, yeah. Did he miss time as in 2022?
I thought he missed time last
year. Okay. I don't remember that, but the 2023, he definitely did. He missed six games and that was because of an injury and that he suffered against Michigan State, and Washington's offense suffered because of it. When he came back, Washington's offense became much more explosive and much more like the offense we were used to seeing than the one that really struggled in the middle of the season. And, I mean, he's a special player. He can get deep. He's got that deep speed. I know that he ran a 4.47 or no, 4.48, 4.47, whatever it was, that he ran. And, you know, he's got, to me, if you put him and Romo Odunze next to each other, he's probably winning by a step or two. He's got that long speed, and he's kind of that long strider. So his speed might not show up in the 40, but man, if he gets deep, it's done. You're not catching him from behind. I'm really fascinated to see where he ends up, you know, a slot receiver at the next level, most likely. And, there's a lot of people who I talked to who said, if he puts it all together, he has the highest upside of the three wide receivers, and that's saying a lot because Romo Odunze is a wide receiver one at the next level. And the feeling is if Jalen McMillan puts it all together and really comes out and is able to stay healthy, like you said, Kim, I mean, he's a guy who could be better than the other two.
And Chris, as the year began, I heard some NFL scouts talking about how they actually preferred Jalen over Rome.
Well, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And a lot of it has to do with fit and also productivity and just whatever, you know, he's been able to do. He's been very successful at, and he's also very versatile with the ball in his hands. You know, you can use him in the reverse game, you know, in those types of fly sweeps and things like that, that he's not unfamiliar to that. He's done that before. So he's got some versatility in his game. You know, I would also say too, that to be honest with you, you know, at least in Seattle here, there's a great comp with between a guy like Jalen McMillan and a guy like Jackson Smith and Jigba. You know, I'm not saying that they're physically the same type of guy or they would be the same type of productive players, but there is some comparisons to be made there in terms of how they could be used and how they are being used in the relative offenses that they play in. And so I think that there's some value there in terms of understanding where he can fit in the NFL. And in that way, he might be a better fit for some teams than a player like a Jalen Polk, for instance. It just all depends, because I've heard a lot of people out there that think Jalen Polk could be a future number one wide receiver for teams, maybe 3, 4, 5 years down the line. Whereas McMillan, it feels like a lot of people may have pigeonholed him in as a certain type of possession style receiver. So there's going to be give and take in all this stuff.
Zion Tupuola-Fatui, ZTF, didn't participate. He was actually invited to the draft. I'm not sure what the injury was. Do you remember what it was, Scott?
No, I do not. I didn't.
When they measured him in, it said it was an arm injury. So whatever that means, okay. Arm injury.
He'll have his chance at the Washington Pro Day, which is it March 30th?
Yes, Thursday, yes. March 30th.
Yeah. Okay, so he'll have his opportunity then. So.
Or no, we'll... I thought it was Thursday. No, Thursday the 28th.
That
yep.
Sounds right. Okay. So we'll have more on him as he participates in the combine up at UW. And Dylan Johnson, he had a slow 40 time, which doesn't surprise me at all. It's like the guys on the broadcast said, that's not his game. He's more of a physical guy who wears you down. He might be that guy if he's on an NFL roster that doesn't see much time in the first half, but you see him later in the game as defenses start to wear down a little bit, Scott.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he can do a lot of things for you. He's never going to be that guy who breaks out and just takes it the distance, you know, 75, 80 yards on a regular basis, especially in the NFL where the guys are much faster, much more schooled on their fundamentals. It isn't like USC's defense was last year where their guys just didn't even look like they wanted to try. This is the NFL, and I just don't see him being a guy who's going to be that breakaway threat. But he's a, you know, he's a 100 carry, 350 to 500 yard, you know, 6, 7, 8 touchdown guy. That he'll be everything that you need him to be as a backup and in that running back rotation. You know, is he a return guy? Probably not in the NFL. I don't see him being that quick twitch guy, but he can be a guy who finds a niche and everything like that. The key for him is going to be whether he's drafted or if he ends up being a free agent. I really hope he's drafted, but if he's a free agent or anything like that, he needs to choose the right situation and find a place that's going to allow him to be who he is, which is a great blocker, a great receiver out of the backfield, and a solid running back for you.
And Chris, I think the key with him is when he gets into camp, he's as good as we've seen in a long time on the pass protection. And he actually had more career receptions than Romo Odunze and Jalen McMillan at the beginning of the year. So I think those are going to be the two keys for him to find his niche in the NFL.
Yeah, you kind of took the thoughts out of my head, Kim. This guy is all about the intangibles and all about the other aspects of the game when it comes to running backs that fans probably don't pay as much attention to, and rightly so, because a running back's job is to run the ball. But a running back that can't pass protect can't get on the field. And so his ability to pass protect, his ability to swing out and catch passes, his hands, those types of things, those are all plus traits for a guy like Dylan Johnson. And that's the thing, when you look at the data points, and yes, he was, you know, second to last in the 40. He was dead last in the 10-yard split, so his explosiveness just wasn't there when he tested on Saturday. You know, but it's interesting because his vertical jump, he was second to last in the vertical jump. You want to know who was dead last in the vertical jump, guys, for the running backs?
No idea.
Bucky Irving.
Yeah.
Does anyone think Bucky Irving's a bad running back? Bucky Irving's arguably the top running back in the Pac-12 last year. So it's just one data point. It's just one day, again, as we've kind of alluded to. But Dylan Johnson was never going to be one of these workout warriors that was just going to, you know, because Washington had a number of those guys that we've talked about already, and there's still a few more to talk about. But that was never going to be his forte on that testing day. What he needed to show was that he was catching passes out of the backfield, looked smooth doing it, and that he could do all the pass techniques and pass pro techniques that these coaches needed to see. And I'm sure he was plus in all that because, again, as we've talked about, tape doesn't lie.
Yeah. Also, one of the guys that was getting a lot of love, kind of, I didn't expect him to get as much attention as he did. I didn't expect him to get as much love, but Dominique Hampton was pretty impressive as well. He came in faster than I anticipated with a 4.51 40. He had a 39-inch vertical jump and 10-foot 2-inch broad jump at 212 pounds. So that kind of surprised me a little bit. And as physical a player as he is, Scott, he improved his draft stock quite a bit, I think.
Well, it is a workout. If you watch his tape, and I think Dominique Hampton, if he finds the right situation, is really good. But if you watch him, he's not a thumper. He's not a guy who's going to come up and, I mean, he's an arm tackler. He wasn't a shoulder tackler that I noticed. I thought he looked much better, you know, as in coverage than I had seen him in previous years. But he's still not great in that either. So, you know, he tested really well. Looked like an absolutely dynamic player. Let's see how teams look at him, because I love Dominique Hampton. He's a great kid. He comes from a great family and everything like that. I question some of his some of his football skills. I think he's more of an athlete than a football player. But that being said, he was very productive for the University of Washington. Didn't he lead the team in tackles last year? So, I mean, he's a guy who can, if he finds the right niche, I think you could see him playing in the NFL for five, six, seven, eight, 9 years, you know, because he's got that body and that style that the teams love. But, I just didn't see a dynamic playmaker, when he got on the football field as a football player. But don't take my word for it. You know, the NFL scouts, whatever the NFL scouts are going to say and the personnel people are going to do in late April, that's the one that's going to tell you what his value is. Don't go by exactly what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, Chris, I thought that if I had a word to describe him at times, I thought Dominique was undisciplined at times. But again, you know, he had a good combine.
He did have a great combine, and he came to Washington as an athletic, bigger defensive back, and he's kind of played all over in all the years that he's played there. He's played a ton of football, and that's the one thing that he really does have going for him is, yeah, he's got a lot of tape out there, but he's also really, really experienced. There's probably not a coverage out there that he hasn't seen, let alone played and played at a high level. And so you couple that with the idea that you look at all of his testing. He was the only other guy other than Rome Odunze of the 11 guys that tested for Washington that went through the entire battery. He did everything. He did not just the 40 and the shuttle and the vertical jumps and the standing broad jump. He did the three cone as well, and he did it faster than Rome. So what NFL teams are looking at right now with Dominique Hampton is they're looking at a great athlete who's extremely experienced. He can more than likely kind of be in that free role. But he's big enough at 215 pounds that he can come down into the box and thump for you a little bit. So if you're in a defense where you need a little bit of a hybrid guy there, like if you're playing and you want him as your nickel, for instance, or that kind of that hybrid husky, kind of that hybrid safety linebacker type look, you know, there's a lot of teams out there that could fall in love very easily with a guy like Dominique Hampton.
Another guy who really tore it up at the combine was Edifuan, otherwise known as Eddie Ulofosio. He had did he have the highest vertical jump of all the linebackers at 39 and a half, ran a 4.56 40. The only thing that's going to hold him back a little bit, maybe his height, 6'1.5". And so 6'2", 236 pounds. But I think Eddie was as advertised and maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, sure tackler. The film shows a guy who has good instincts and a lot of what you're looking for in a linebacker. He can cover. He's actually pretty good in space. And, you know, his biggest thing is going to be false steps, because as good as he was on what was it, Friday that he did his workout, whatever day it was he did his workout, he looked outstanding. I don't think he plays in reverse that well, and he can struggle if he takes some bad steps. So big thing for him is going to be just knowing his limitations and the right team finding him. He's probably going to have to make his hay on special teams, which I don't know if you guys remember, but his first play as a Husky, as a walk-on, as a true freshman came in, what was it, 2018, 2019, whatever it was, when he forced a fumble on a kickoff versus Oregon State.
So, did he have two that game?
First two
kickoffs that he covered. So I think the NFL is looking at him as a guy who can probably play multiple positions for them, maybe be a nickel linebacker for them. But he's going to have to make a roster, I think. Even if he's drafted, I think the way he makes a roster is as a special teams demon. And then he learns a little bit the nuances of playing middle linebacker just a little bit more. He's very smart. He's a guy who picks up on things very quickly. I just think he needs a little bit more in the fundamentals than he has currently.
Jack Westover, another guy that was hurt, didn't participate in the drills on the field, and we'll see him at Husky Pro Day. But Chris, I think he's got a chance.
He absolutely has a chance. No, I mean, you know, it sounds like a hand injury. I saw a tweet by Softy out there kind of confirming that Jack was not going to be able to test or work out, but he was invited like Zion was. And again, much like Eddie Ulofosio, a phenomenal story in terms of a guy who comes to Washington as a walk-on, earns a scholarship, and not only earns a scholarship as just being a roster guy, but being an integral key to the side of the ball that they were on. Jack, obviously, on offense, Eddie on defense. You just see these guys being just invaluable to what they can contribute. And it sucks kind of at the NFL level, because I think, as Scott kind of alluded to, sometimes these guys can kind of get pigeonholed as just kind of, you know, jack of all trades, master of none, special teams guys, things like that. But hey, if you can find a roster, you've made a career for yourself in the NFL, and that's phenomenal. And a guy like Westover, with his story as a walk-on coming through, what he shows on tape, you know, like everyone that talked about Westover that I listened to, not only leading up to the combine guys, but then in the combine itself, when they were kind of talking about the Washington players as a group coming in, they just talked about him saying, you know what? There wasn't anything that like super wowed you until you put the tape on, and he just kept making play after play after play. Every single game, he had at least one like really momentous catch, or at a key moment, at a key stage in the game, that really helped Washington win. And so he's a guy that makes winning plays. I think that will again show up as they continue to do their due diligence, and hopefully he'll be healthy enough to do a full workout at the end of the month at the Dempsey.
Last guy we want to talk about is Devin Culp. Kind of surprising. I was really surprised at his weight. He weighed in at 231 pounds, and then he blew a 4.47 40-yard dash for a long time. It looked like he was going to have the fastest 40-yard time of any of the guys participating at the combine from University of Washington until Rome ran his 4.45. But, you know, Scott, a little surprised at his weight?
Maybe a little bit. I thought he'd be around 240. He carries his weight really well, I think, but, you know, at 230 pounds, you know, I thought he looked just unbelievable. Looked like one of the most athletic guys out there for his size and height and weight and all that different stuff. His mom and I were messaging each other during the combine, and she was so excited for how he was doing and everything like that. And, just a really great kid overall, hard worker. Has some undeniable athletic traits, but also just hasn't been productive to the point where you'd expect him to be with his athletic traits. And I think some of that was because of the system that he was in. I also think it was the lack of productivity, you know, consistent hands. There were times when he'd drop some easy passes and then he'd make the spectacular catch. And the NFL would rather you not make the spectacular catch and catch the easy ones. So he's going to have to find a niche. I think he's a guy who, if he can find that H-back role where he can be a blocker in the running game, you know, be a guy that they extend in motion, catch passes out of the backfield, maybe catching different position groups, positions on the field and everything like that. I think that's where he's going to be able to find his niche, but he's got the athleticism. He's got the work ethic, all that different stuff. He's got all that stuff that you need to have a nice decade long career in the NFL.
Hey Scott, I know you need to run, but I want, before you go, give us what you got on recruiting before you have to go as long as you need to, or as long as you have.
Okay. I don't have that long. I actually lost track of time. So, basically, today is the beginning of the quiet period, where we've been in the dead period for the month of February, basically, in the first few days of March. And basically, Washington's coaches haven't been able to be in person with any recruits. They will be able to do that here over the next 6 weeks in the quiet period, and then they'll actually be able to be out on the road, even though they'll be in the middle of spring ball. So they won't be able to get out on the road until after spring ball is completed, but they'll basically go out and recruit guys and do different things. They'll talk to get different guys. They'll have a lot of guys on campus. I put a blog up this morning. There's a list of guys there that are going to be in for unofficial visits. These are not official visitors. Unofficial visits can't begin until April. So expect Washington to be out recruiting, not out recruiting, I'm sorry, recruiting guys, bringing them in on visits, having meetings and everything like that. I'm still trying to put together some dates with names so that I can have those for you. Right now I don't have those, but I think you can expect to see at least one more commit before spring football begins. It wouldn't surprise me if that happens. It might not, but it wouldn't surprise me if we see another commit. And they're also working the portal. There's a guy that I listed today in my blog who is out of Grambling that is an interior offensive lineman, and Washington has given him a long look. And he's a guy who could be here in the spring. So and then there's also an SMU offensive lineman that Washington is looking at that people have been asking about as well. So check out the blog. Lots of stuff going on. Things are really going to start picking up. I've been relatively inconsistent with my blogs the last couple weeks just because things I don't want to say they weren't recruiting. They were recruiting. But things are really going to heat up, and you should be able to see a blog from me at least once every week. Here through probably the end of June. So,
yeah, just kind of busy, Scott. Oh, I know you've got to run, so thanks for updating us. But spring ball is scheduled to begin on May 2nd. We've got a basketball game on Saturday at Wazoo.
It's Thursday.
Is it Thursday? I thought it was Saturday.
It's Thursday.
Boy, my head's somewhere else. But yeah, it should be an interesting game, especially after the game that was here. Players took notice of what was happening post game at the Apple Cup game here when Washington State won that game. They stayed out on the court for quite some time and celebrated. So I know that that's going to be brought up. And then off to the Pac-12 tournament on which will begin on next Wednesday. So, Scott, are you still there or did you take
Yes, off? I am. Yes, my I actually got a message that they needed to postpone the meeting that I had. So I'm with you guys.
All right. Hey, just well,
hold on then. Can we talk a little bit, Scott, about the about Washington's latest commitments?
Yeah, let's do that. Yep.
Because okay. Washington got a couple of commitments from the, you know, as the world turns and all these coaches go to these different places, there's all the residual recruiting that they did at their last stop. And so Washington is still kind of benefiting from the residual recruiting that the current staff did at Arizona. And so they picked up a couple of guys that the staff committed to Arizona and actually got them to sign at Arizona, but then they were able to get out of their letter of intent and now they're committed to Washington.
Yeah, one is an offensive lineman by the name of Michael Watkins. He's an interior guy, 6'3", a little over 300 pounds. Talked to him. I posted that on, I think it was Friday that I posted that interview that I did. He's a guy who will play any of the three interior spots, but he said he's going to start out at center. And I know people have a big question mark about center with Parker Brailsford moving on. The backup center, Landon Hatchett, had a hurt his leg during the bowl practices. I believe he tore up his knee. I don't think that's a big secret. So there's a big question on what's going to happen along the offensive line at the center spot. And you're probably going to see Royce Cleland, who played that's Cam Cleland's son. He played that at Jesuit High School down in Portland during his prep career. He hasn't obviously seen the field at all. He was just a walk-on freshman last year, but I think you'll see him get some snaps there. He's a talented kid. He just didn't get a lot of offers that he really wanted and came up to the University of Washington as a walk-on. So, Watkins is a huge piece for Washington. Maybe not for this year. I mean, I just don't know if you want to throw in a true freshman, especially at center, he's a big cog in the wheel, in the machinery for Washington heading forward over the next 4, 5, 6 years as he gets ready to come in and start his career. Then the other is tight end. I'm drawing a blank on the first name. Last name is Kroll.
Charlie
Kroll. That's right. Charlie Kroll out of Summit High School down in Bend, Oregon. He's about 6'6". He's a legit 6'6", 230-ish pounds, somewhere in that range. Athletic as all get out, can make plays in the passing game, is a pretty good run blocker as well, because Summit has a run first offense. Kind of like, they're not like Tumwater, where Tumwater will run it 60 times a game and throw it 5 or 6 times like what Ryan Otten went through. But he's a guy who didn't get a lot of throws his way just because he just didn't throw the ball very much. But he's shown the ability to get out and run routes, has good, strong hands. can be a real playmaker for Washington down the road. And he's going to add, he's not coming in until Michael Watkins will be at Washington for spring ball, whereas Charlie Kroll won't be at Washington until the start of summer when the elite program begins.
Sounds like he's a, I don't know if he's a big time basketball player, but it sounds like he's a pretty good basketball player.
He's pretty well, okay. So the one thing about Summit is they are a program football wise that won a title. I think Charlie won a title as a freshman or no, as a sophomore, they won a title and then they skipped a year. And then this year they lost in the championship game. I think I could be wrong on that. And then, they won a title or maybe they won the state title this year. I can't remember. I should have looked that up. But then on basketball, they won a state title as a sophomore. And then they missed. They made it to the semis last year. And then this year they're projected. They're the number one team in the state. And they're expected to play West Lynn. It's been them and West Lynn all year long, apparently, in basketball. And so state begins, I believe, this coming weekend. I think it's Thursday is when they start state there. And we should know something about him. But that's why he did not enroll early at the University of Washington, because he wanted to play basketball with, one last run with his friends and teammates.
Only reason I brought that up, Scott, was because the last guy to come in as a tight end who had a legit basketball experience and was considered a good basketball player, Jack Westover.
Yeah, he was. Austin Safarian Jenkins was also a pretty good one, too.
Yep.
All right. Wrap it up, Chris Fetters.
Yeah, just I think overall a really, really strong combine for the players that were able to work out. I think that there were a handful of guys that maybe coming in, We were kind of on the fence of 50-50, kind of could go either way. But I really think that Edifuan Ulufosio really helped himself. I think Dom Hampton really helped himself. I think Devin Culp absolutely helped himself with the fastest 40 time of all the tight ends that were there. And then the two offensive linemen, I think, physically showed that they have everything that NFL teams need in terms of their quickness, side-to-side movement, straight ahead speed. Anything you wanted them to do, they could do. And then obviously the rest of it you can see on tape. It's there for everyone to see. So I think they did phenomenal. In terms of the skill guys, like it's tough. Dylan Johnson is just such a tough guy to really look at from a combine point of view. But again, tape doesn't lie on him. I think the three receivers were phenomenal, especially Rome. Went through everything, really showed himself to be exactly who he is. And then Michael Penix, I think he's still going to be the story of the Washington players coming through. I know Rome's going to get picked ahead of Penix more than likely. I mean, 99 times out of 100, probably that's going to be the case. But the question on these quarterbacks, guys, is there going to be a run on quarterbacks? That's going to be the question. And if there is, where is Michael Penix's place in that list? Where does he fit in? So I think that's going to be the real question moving forward. But this pro day that's coming up at the Dempsey at the end of the month is going to be must-see TV. You're going to have scouts from every single team in the NFL there. And it's going to be an absolute circus. And it's going to be so much fun to cover. So I can't wait.
Scott, wrap it up.
I agree with a lot of things Chris said. You know, I think Devin Culp made himself some money. I think that Troy Fa'utanu solidified himself. I think Washington's got a chance to have three guys drafted in the first round. I think Michael Penix, if he's not a mid-first round guy, I could see a team trading up if they really want a quarterback and need one at the end of the first round. I could see him being in there. I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but I don't think Washington's ever had three guys taken in the first round. I think Steve Entman and Dana Hall were the two that one year in 1991. So, or I'm sorry, 1992's draft. So, what people need to understand is this is unheard of for the University of Washington. The kind of talent that is coming out and is available in the NFL draft. Washington has never had double digits, I don't think. Have they, Chris? Do you remember off the top of your head?
No.
I don't think so. I think eight is the most Huskies that have ever been drafted. I could be wrong on that, but I thought that's what I remember.
Well, in terms of the seven-round era moving forward, definitely not. Now, in the 90s, like when it was 10, 12, yeah, whatever rounds it was, they had guys in the double digits. But
okay,
but in the modern era, from the seven round era, not a chance, not even.
But
close.
You could see of the 13 guys, I could see 10 of those guys easily getting drafted, and I could see all 13 getting drafted, depending on people falling in love with them. Jack Westover could have an issue if he isn't able to get 100% healthy, and there's some questions. But the nice thing is, in the NFL, you don't have to be drafted to make a team. All you got to do is find the right situation and then go in and show that, hey, you might be paying these other guys millions of dollars, but me making $500,000 for you for a couple years, I'm going to be more productive than him. And teams would much rather have that than a guy that's going to cost them $12 million and be less productive. So I think Washington really showed well for the program and put Washington on the map for a lot of people. A lot of people are like, you know, the championship game playoff run that they did, that they went on, and you know, being undefeated, finishing second in the country, that has put them on the map for so many people who knew Washington existed but didn't really think much of the program. And I think they've really solidified themselves. Now it's up to Jed Fish and his new staff of coaches and recruiters to come in and bring in the talent that's going to continue this run of multiple guys going to the combine and also getting drafted.
Hey, Kim, yep, real quick, I want to add just two more things. First of all, to add to that, to what you just said, Scott, about Jed Fish kind of continuing this thing, I've seen some tweets lately by some of the guys on Fish's staff, some of the support guys and what have you, and it's a culmination of some of the things that they've seen and what they've observed kind of this last month or so that they've been a part of this so far. And I think their points are really salient, and especially this one. He said, when you see all these guys go to this combine experience and you see all these guys and people talk about, well, these guys were developed by so-and-so or they were developed by this coach or that coach. They're like, no, these guys were developed by the University of Washington. Because if you take a guy like a Jack Westover or you take a guy like a Dom Hampton, for instance, that's a guy that was recruited by Chris Peterson, developed by Chris Peterson and Jimmy Lake, and then Kalen DeBoer with his assistance. And then, you know, so it's basically what they're telling you is it's not an individual. It's not a coach. It's the program. It's the culture. It's what's been put in place at the University of Washington that's so impressive and was able to transcend the fact that there were coaching transitions, that there were coaching changes, because all these guys continued to develop and continued to get better and better and better because of where they were and what the culture was. And I thought that was super important. And then I think the last thought I would leave fans with on this is that this is just the beginning of the kind of the media tour for all the Washington guys going through the draft process. The combine's kind of the starting point. You look like the NFL Network, like Monday morning, this morning, going through, they're still talking about the Washington guys, and they're talking about them a lot. And they're really heaping praise on a lot of these guys. And again, like Scott said, if Washington could get three guys drafted in the first round and make a historic statement moving forward, That's just going to add all you need to what Jed Fish and these guys want to try to do on the recruiting trail moving forward to keep this thing going.
Yeah, just this has been a wild football year. The the new athletic director Troy Dannon coming in, he's made a big deal about the W, and that seems to be what they want to market this program around. And the W has been pretty front and center this entire football year, leading all the way up to the national championship game. You know, with the season going undefeated, the Pac-12 championship game, the Sugar Bowl, the national championship game. Then Kalen DeBoer, still Washington in the news with Kalen DeBoer leaving. Washington still in the news with the hiring of Jed Fish. And again, front and center for the entire weekend with the NFL Combine with 13 players. So the publicity Washington has been getting this year, you just can't buy. So it's been a good year for University of Washington football. And it's going to be interesting when spring ball comes around, because there's so many new players and so many new coaches. We don't know what we got. So that'll be a good chance for us to figure it out. So, again, the Pac-12 basketball tournament next week, the Washington State game on Thursday. We'll see what happens with Coach Mike Hopkins after the Pac-12 basketball tournament. So it's going to be a busy offseason once we get through all of this. So all of us, for Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells, along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.